This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Rob with John Pollock and waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Rob for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Rob for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rewind to Raw. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting coming to you from Toronto, where it is minus 13 outside, and they state it feels like minus 22 Celsius.
The coldest it's been this season, right?
Yes. Yes, easily. It was. Yeah. Were you out today? I had to pick up my kids today, and that requires me being outside for pretty much an hour, and I was just dead. It was so goddamn cold.
I was up briefly, but I was driving, so not so bad. Like, it's so cold that I'm getting warnings about freezing pipes, which thankfully I've never had to experience yet, but it is a danger. Pipes freeze, yeah.
Pipes are, they can be a problem in a home, especially if they break.
Especially if you live in an old 100-year-old Toronto house.
Yes, yeah. Yep. I can attest to it. Well, welcome everyone to Home Care with John Pollock and Wei Ting from Toronto. It is January 20th. We are going to be getting into tonight's edition of Raw. How many are we going to continue? Because on our description, we had, you know, John and Wei review the first episode of Raw on Netflix. Last week was John and Wei review the second episode of Raw on Netflix. I made the executive decision to eliminate it today, and I just said we review Raw. I thought we're not going to number these after two, are we? Or should we?
I think we should go to 175.
John and Wei review the 1,655th edition of Raw on Netflix, which if they end up going the duration of this deal and there's extensions, they could hit it. It's always possible. Mm-hmm. But that is coming up. For those of you that are tuning in here live on the free portion, this is just the beginning of the party because it really gets fun when we chat about the news, which is going to be coming up a little later on after the Raw review. So we split things up on Sunday. I took TNA duty with John Cena. Wei and Kate got to cover the marathon that was the People versus GCW. Did the People win or did GCW win? So both of us did our separate reviews, but there's a ton of news coming out of both shows. So we are going to cover all the fallout from, I would say, two very noteworthy shows for myriad reasons. We'll do a catch up on the latest involving Alley Catch. We're going to talk about PCO. We're going to talk about Joe Hendry, Cora Jade, everything in between. We will be covering following those shows, and maybe even a little bit about Tommy Invincible.
Oh, the highlight of my weekend.
All of that and more is coming up on the news, so if you want to jump on board, postwrestlingcafe.com, and that is where you can join us live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the entire XL edition of those shows, which come with the show review, come with the news, and then your questions and feedback that we dedicate a couple minutes to at the end of each and every show. Also, want to make mention that coming up this week, we have quite the slate of shows coming your way. Rich Fan will be joining me and Brandon Thurston this coming Wednesday on Pollock and Thurston. Later that night, we have Rewind to Dynamite. And Thursday, we go back on Rewind Away to December of 2008 for the memorable Armageddon show from Buffalo.
Yes, I know.
Is there a week that goes by, Wei, that we don't reminisce about this show from December of 2008? In the middle of a red hot period of WWE history where Matt Hardy squared off with Vladimir Kozlov and Dave Finley and Mark Henry had a Belfast brawl.
I can't say I'm ever nostalgic about like late 2000s WWE at all, but that's not to say they don't make for good reviews, because sometimes the most forgotten and mundane and some awful, you know, portions of wrestling history make for the most.
Oh, there's awful stuff on this show. Believe me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to dedicate an hour to the Santa's Little Helpers match because they're in the Christmas season. So what better way to celebrate?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And even though Raw was 2 hours back then, I feel like many people would much prefer the modern day version compared to that.
I'm on my fourth sitting of Armageddon 2008 to put it into comparison to what a typical edition of Raw goes for. But that's all coming up this week. And for this weekend, Wayne and I will be live on the free feed for Saturday night's main event, which will be a 2 hour show.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or as GCW calls it, a warm up.
Yeah, pretty much.
All that and more coming your way this week. So follow along at postwrestling.com. Tonight, Raw taking place from the American Airlines Center, a gigantic arena, but one of which WWE filled with a WrestleTix number of 14,074. Michael Cole repeatedly giving the number of 15,572. Going by WrestleTix numbers. So again, we're only 3 weeks into the year. They have had now six TV dates, and this is excluding NXT, so just Raw and SmackDown TV dates. They're averaging over 12,500 per show.
That's incredible.
That is wild. Like, mm-hmm. They have one show that has done under 10,000, and that show did over 9. So just to tell you, like, they are red hot at the moment. And do you feel that Raw is gaining just... Is there a Netflix momentum to selling tickets? Do you think that is part and parcel, or is it just the hot characters on Raw? Because we're certainly, it's not like SmackDown is lagging or anything like that. Like, both shows are drawing really well, but Raw in particular, they're seeing these surges of tickets moving in the days leading up to these shows. I think they moved like 5,000 tickets for tonight's show in over the last couple of days.
I absolutely have to think it's the Netflix effect, and this is the benefit beyond, I think, you know, what we've assumed would be a greater reach internationally. It's the promotion that simply just comes, you know, from being attached to a Netflix brand, and the increased, you know, feeling that this is something that is more culturally relevant now than ever. And not to mention the fact that we're heading into WrestleMania season, so you can expect these sort of booms to occur naturally anyway, but now especially so.
Yeah, they're doing this without John Cena, that you're going to have at your disposal. And it was interesting because when they teed up next Monday's Raw, they didn't promote that Roman Reigns celebration segment that they had announced, if you remember, when he said, "I'll be back on the 27th. They just didn't bring it up at all. So, and this had not been, WWE had not announced, but Bill Goldberg's name was linked to next week's show as well. But yeah, we will see if all of those things in fact happen next week. But
they do also have Friday and Saturday to hammer those things home.
Well, I would say at this point too, it was like, they don't need to be hitting this stuff super hard. It was just the Reigns thing they had already announced, so I just assumed they would have made a big deal out of it tonight, that next week Roman Reigns returns. Tonight they are going up against the college football championship between Iowa State and Notre Dame, which their head coach, they aired a clip of on today's show just to show, hey, he's a WWE fan. And what brings us to Raw at the beginning? Nia Jax jumping Rhea Ripley in the back, and Rhea Ripley is saved by security as Adam Pearce screams at the top of his lungs, "Give me a medic!" And that's how Raw began, with my eardrum getting blasted. And we have Pat McAfee off doing the college football championship with his game day duty. So in to replace him is Wade Barrett.
You see something like this, and I don't think there's any other way to read it as an internet wrestling fan than to assume that it's Corey Graves being in the doghouse. I mean, we can't confirm
this
that,
absolutely would have been Corey Graves as the fill-in for for this show.
And I think, like, for the company, I mean, it seems to send a very clear message. If you're upset, do not air your grievances publicly at your employer on X.
Well, we got Wade Barrett for the whole 3 hours, and it was interesting because they made a not a big deal, but they did promote JBL all week long that he would be on Raw. And my thought would be maybe they're going to go with like the 3-man booth here or something. I don't quite know why JBL was on this show, to be honest. Like, it's not like he was there to shoot an angle. It was just to be there. And that was it. Like, they really didn't feel like they had any idea other than JBL was here and we'll put you on commentary and do a quick segment with you. Backstage.
I assume just maybe something bonus for the Texas crowd, you know, the way they've been wanting to.
Why they saw 5,000 tickets move over the last?
It has to be. People saw JBL at TNA Genesis and they're like, you know what? I want to see more of that guy on Monday, you know, commentary.
Just a short trip from Garland. Let's go to Raw tomorrow night to see the follow up here. Jey Uso comes out, insane response to him. And God, they are just every single city they go to, they just make Yeet merchandise specific to the market, which between these Jey Uso localized merch items and what we know they will be getting out of the John Cena hometown colors that they're going to be doing for all the markets, I mean, the merchandise will be just fine this quarter and beyond. So he goes to state how he's going to take home the big one on Saturday night's main event when Gunther interrupts. And Gunther, they note, the ring is sacred. He has no room for any entertainment. Well, I disagree, because he gets in and immediately calls this Jey Uso a funny little man and said, I looked forward to facing you until I saw you come out tonight acting like a complete dork, this company mascot. I could have just as easily been challenged by Jimmy Uso, again, leaning on the can we even tell them apart maybe the most famous promo now for the Usos as a collective. And Jey never follows up with his words, even though this crowd, they're so naive, they'll believe anything you feed them anyway, and states, it's you are willing to show up as soon as your cousin needs your help or your brother snaps his fingers. You're a useful idiot. And states that my words, unlike yours, do mean something. And on Saturday, I will expose you as the flash in the pan, and you have no business being this close to this world championship, as he holds it in front of Jey. And Jey gains his composure and admits, that's all true. I am a mascot. And these people, they're my team. They're my squad. And I'm going to win this title. I respect you, Gunther, but I respect me too. And only one of us in this ring can say that we headlined WrestleMania, and it's not you. And they get into a big fight. The crowd really gets into Jey when he gets on offense and sends Gunther to the floor. And there he is with the title. This crowd went wild as he grabbed the belt and he laid it down for Gunther to take. So I think they've done as good a job as they can to promote this title match for TV. I don't think anyone is envisioning a title change, but they certainly gave it. This is like the biggest match they're promoting for this Saturday night's main event. This is, I don't feel on par with the special we got last month, but this was, I like this segment.
I thought it was a very good segment. You know, I think the Saturday night main events, especially the second one in, we're probably going to get a better sense of like the level of relevance of these shows. But I also don't think they're throwing in the towel or like giving you something that's skippable. I think Jey Uso challenging for the championship for people that are active WWE fans is a big deal. So
we've got an amendment to a contract. Okay, it's a whole new wrinkle on the contract signing. We have an addendum.
Yeah. Again, not the biggest thing, but that's also like to me not something where I feel like you would say Jey Uso is only a Saturday night's main event challenger. For instance, I think you could have put this on a Rumble, you know, second to, of course, you know, the Rumble as a semi main, and I think it would have been a satisfying semi main. On maybe, you know, not this year, but like in prior years, this could have even been a WrestleMania type of match, you know, with as hot of a character as Jey Uso is. So I think Jey is like a really strong challenger. And I think tonight's crowd reaction like told you that they're taking this guy seriously as a potential title holder, not even just a challenger. But it took, I think, like a great promo from Gunther here to really drag out, like just even another level from a Jey Uso promo. Like Gunther is just, he's so great at just like digging out your insecurities. And I mean, you know, he's sort of the internet fan's voice. He is every snarky wrestling fan pointing out like why somebody might suck. And I think Jey Uso has given some tremendously like passionate responses in response to like some, I think what can be seen as some very pessimistic but valid criticisms from Gunther here. So I've been enjoying these two interactions that these two have had over the past 2 weeks.
Could you imagine the babyface turn for Gunther, and to get him babyface, they just have him do a segment like this with Hulk Hogan?
No word on Mr. Hogan's appearance this Saturday.
They did not bring it up. Do you know where he was tonight? He was at the Liberty Ball.
Sure, I would expect him to be there. Yeah.
Yes, there was quite a contingent of TKO and TKO adjacent representation at the inauguration.
Do you expect Hulk Hogan this Saturday?
They certainly did not hit that hard on tonight's show.
I don't even think we saw the promo that he was.
I didn't see it. Yeah, like there's always the chance we might have missed some mention of it, but I found it very notable that they were not hitting Hogan's name very hard in this.
Yeah.
I would be surprised. I would be surprised if he is not on the show on Saturday.
I would be surprised if he was at this point. I think they must have been waiting up until like maybe this week to gauge the heat. And I think it's still very much there.
Well, wait, I think that was the exact thought I had, was gauging the crowd. This is a Texas audience. I think it was very deliberate that CM Punk brought up Hogan's name and to gauge the what is the reaction? There were definitely some boos, but it's not like the crowd erupted in negativity. I don't know if you would have an answer based on that, but I totally believe that was why that Hogan line was in there, was to gauge that exact sense of here in a big arena, a Texas crowd, which is what we'll have on Saturday. Are they going to just totally, and if they all boo here, that would have been the signal. Yeah, this was, look at Jackie Redmond. Jackie Redmond was not ready for Hulk Hogan to be brought up here.
So it's a very valid and interesting point, you know, like whenever they mention names as like potential barometers of crowd interest. But I maintain that no matter how Texas or San Antonio might react to Hogan, the online reaction they can easily predict is going to be negative. And I think it'll only reinforce like what is still a very discussed segment from that Netflix debut.
I think the online is less for them because that's not a viral clip that gets around. That's not going to get like, yes, online people are going to be very negative on Hogan. I think they don't want kind of a PR blunder of an entire arena booing this guy that's now also their business partner. I think that's more the optics of it. I think just like we've seen plenty of times when Hogan, like the online discourse hasn't always matched up with the in arena response to Hulk Hogan. I think they're much more concerned about like the live reaction.
Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. Many of our listeners already use Nord to access cheaper prices to AEW pay-per-views or ad-free international versions of WWE programming. But the benefits of a VPN go beyond streaming, especially as online criminal tactics are becoming increasingly sophisticated. One threat that's been on the rise is SIM swapping, where just a bit of your personal info can help criminals impersonate you to your cell provider and virtually transfer your SIM card to their phone. Using a trusted VPN like Nord, especially when using public Wi-Fi, helps keep your data safe from prying eyes on the same network. Over at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, you can sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months with our link. Again, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with NordVPN.
Backstage, New Day meet up with JBL and they want to pay him off with $2 to get preferential commentary when he's out there. And JBL just talks about Woods explains that, you know, just like you, JBL, you cut out the dead weight and you turned out to have a great singles career. And we're asking you to go out on commentary and be an acolyte for us. And JBL's like, oh, I love the New Day. And then he just goes on and on about all of the great positives about Big E, and then kind of wonders like, what did he need you guys for? So that was that in the back. I just want to say, I certainly questioned if the New Day were going to be so seamlessly able to transition to heels. They have been fantastic. Yeah. I just like, this is, it almost feels like these are such natural roles for them. And I could not have imagined this turn would go so well as it has here.
Yeah, I was definitely one that said when they were doing the breakup teases that I said I would have been very disappointed if this all just kind of results in a reunited New Day and they don't go on their singles pass, because I didn't think there was anything new to accomplish. And I was wrong. Like, they have certainly refreshed themselves in a great way. Seeing them as heels, I never thought would really amount to something this entertaining. I think they are sort of at like a level where they're beyond the tag division, and the fact that they've not yet once mentioned, you know, wanting, or at least like not seriously campaigning for like the War Raiders titles, tells you everything you need to know about the status of the tag team division. They're beyond that with this turn.
They aren't focusing on it, but to me, I think if they do end up going that direction, to me, it feels fresh. If they get those tag belts again under this run, I think that it's not something they need at this point, but I don't think it's something you dismiss for the future with them as well. Like, it doesn't feel like a retread of the New Day winning the tag belts, because they just feel they're such new characters now. No limo entrance for JBL, which they even joked about, his limo's in the shop. And we get, this is during the international feed where Kathy Kelly interviews Bayley. Bayley has moved to Raw per the transfer window. It's really cold outside, and this transfer window has been open since like October, so it's getting chilly. So Bayley's on Raw. She declares herself for the Rumble. Nia Jax walks in. She has not moved to Raw. She just shows up on Raw. I don't know what the difference is between these two. And Nia Jax also declares herself for the Royal Rumble, and she's got a match tonight. We also have the representation of the professional Bull Riders, who got great seats to tonight's edition of Raw. Three individuals who you have never heard of and you will never hear of again after this were identified. And that takes us to Rey Mysterio and Kofi Kingston. And the New Day's music begins, and they immediately cut it off, stating, "We're not using that anymore." And they just walk to the ring, insulting the fans, yelling at them for chanting "New Day sucks." And this entrance worked. I mean, maybe at some point they'll introduce a new theme, but this kind of just walking down and getting booed, it works too.
It was perfect. I mean, rather than introduce a new song, the audience's disappointment at the Big E song being cut off is the best song that they could have as heels. You know, it's like with Don Callis, it's like with Rey Mysterio. The wall of noise that these audience provide for them is a gift, and really the best soundtrack they could possibly have.
So Kingston is just wrestling in black jeans. I am hoping that he has like the most unspectacular elimination in the Royal Rumble, like the most boring, dull, unmemeable elimination this year.
Could be that, yeah, or it could just be something where he kind of falls on his face, like which he actually did 1 year as a baby face. But there are new possibilities now to play around with.
He's had a few years of the big ambitious elimination has not quite gone his way, and this year I feel the stakes are not that high for him to have to replicate past eliminations. So first of all,
he should be the one to cut off somebody else's very spectacular save.
That would be a great spot. They steal the $2 back from JBL and Kingston. And so all week they just promoted New Day in Action. And then as of this afternoon, it was just New Day in Action. What that usually means is they're taking on someone of no consequence. And in this case, this was like the big showdown with Rey Mysterio we get with Kofi and Rey. I thought they had a great match here. Tremendous heat from this crowd in Dallas. And we see one of the more scary spots that we're going to talk about here is they go to the floor and Kofi eyes the desk and he goes to lift Rey for like a powerbomb. And you think he's going to powerbomb him onto the desk, but he loses his grip of Rey. And Rey basically rotates on his own in midair. And the best way I can describe it is like Rey powerbombed himself. This was the fact that he landed flat on his back was thankful here. And this continued. But this looked so scary. And I had to rewind to be like, what happened? I have never seen this move get screwed up like this.
Even veterans, you know, with as many years as deep as they can, you could still lose grip, and this could have been a lot uglier. Thankfully, it wasn't.
So match continues, and Ray sends Kofi into the steps. JBL laments all the flips and flops out there. Sometimes you just need to kick someone in the face. And when talking about Rey Mysterio's longevity, it was funny because JBL was out here to be kind of the, he's there against the New Day, but then he just runs down Rey for most of this match. He states for his longevity. We don't even know if this is the same Rey Mysterio. Has anyone seen him under this mask? And eventually Kofi avoids a 619, and Woods trips Rey and gets ejected to this monstrous pop. But then Kingston gets hit with the 619. Rey goes to drop the dime but lands on the knees, and Rey counters a boom drop, just sitting down and hooks Kofi's leg for the cover in 10 and a half minutes. So Rey gets the win. Kofi loses. And afterwards, Woods is attacking with Rey, and that prompts Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Wilde to run out. New Day come back. They attack Wilde from behind and they run away.
A little surprised at the finish here, given just like I think the focus is really on the New Day as these new threats, and to have them lose their first match back was not necessarily expected. I can understand it though, because Rey is coming off of the loss on Friday, and I think the New Day are so over as heels right now that they're practically bulletproof with any sort of booking. So I don't think it ultimately matters who won or lost this one. Because the reception to it alone was so big. This overall, I thought, was like a relatively standard match, but it was made so much more special by a very engaged crowd as a result of the excellent heel work from the New Day prior to this, and also during the match itself. And of course, Rey Mysterio being about like the easiest babyface foil a group of heels can work with.
Kathy Kelly interviewed American Maid, and Gable admits he's got a problem with luchadors after losses to Rey, Dragon Lee, and now Penta. So he is going to seek the help from Dominic Mysterio. Meanwhile, Ivy Nile has her eyes on the women's IC belt, and the Creeds want to go after the tag belts from War Raiders because they're at the end of their prime. We're just entering ours. Then Jackie interviews Karrion Kross and Scarlett. I didn't know what was going on here. So Karrion Kross explains he just had 4 espressos and broke some baseball bats to prepare for this. He takes credit for derailing the momentum of the Wyatt 6 and sending them off SmackDown. I would argue his momentum has been greatly derailed with the loss of the Wyatt 6 because he felt like he was just volunteer. Hey, I'll do the international segment. What are you going to say? Oh, you know what? Just standard stuff. And this guy came out and just shot his own programs. He said, I've got my eyes on Seth Rollins. I've got my eyes on CM Punk. And I've got my eyes on Sami Zayn. And then goes on to explain that Zayn justifies aligning with terrible people. And he doubts that Sami Zayn truly believes the things he says. I'm going to go out on a limb that in the next 6 months, I guarantee there will be no match between him and CM Punk. I guarantee there will be no match with Karrion Kross and Seth Rollins. And I'm almost positive we are not going to get anything between Karrion Kross and Sami Zayn. I don't think this had any connection to any canon that is going on in the Raw universe.
He had a brief interaction with Sami last week. So this might have just been, based off a follow up on that. We can't completely rule it out. I also, as we continue to watch these international shows, we start to maybe sense like what the purpose of these Jackie segments during commercial are, how relevant they are to the shows themselves. I don't know. I think they range. Some of these feel almost completely improvised. Others feel like they have more of a purpose. I essentially think that they are like what, I don't know if they still do .com exclusives, but these sort of have the vibe of those where it's just like not necessarily viewing, but they might have some relevance to current story. For me, what the interest is in seeing these is to see how, perhaps with a less scripted version of these characters, how they seem to play their characters. And I think Karrion Kross is like, with this new character that he has, which I'm absolutely enjoying, he's really best showcased in these sort of like less scripted, forums. I don't know if there's much he was actually building to here, but I thought it was just like fun to see him play off of Jackie with these, like, he's found a great tone for his character where, again, it's like heelish, but almost like cartoony comedic heel. And I think he's actually like very witty, to the point where I'm starting to see him gain a lot of momentum online. And eventually I feel that it'll turn itself into like an actual, like, substantial role on TV for him.
Maybe he'll be this year's LA Knight.
Could, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how you... You know what? I've also got my eyes on John Cena. I've got my eyes on Roman Reigns. And I've
got throw it out there.
Yeah. You know what? Shoot your shot.
Yeah.
Because they were in Dallas, I guess in the same arena where Wade Barrett was on the first season of NXT and won, they showed footage of this from 15 years ago with David Otunga.
We know in this current era, they really like to show specifically like something that's special about the place that they're in. And they, I guess they were really digging to find something special about this one. With
what have we ever done in Dallas? I would think like there would be plenty of candidates, but we got to David Otunga and Wade Barrett in the first season of NXT.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Sami Zayn comes out, and he has entered the Royal Rumble. And he talks about what he wants. And he goes back to the 14-year-old him and how there's a small percentage of people that become professional wrestlers, even a smaller amount that make it to the WWE, and an even smaller percentage of those that become top-tier stars. And that's where I feel I am. I believe I am just as good as Roman Reigns, Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins, CM Punk, and Karrion Kross. And he states that the only difference is that they have a world title to their name and I don't. I've had a great life, but I don't need a title to complete my career. I've had the fan support. I don't need it, but damn it, I want it. And the 14-year-old me wants it. And that 14-year-old is still here. And out comes Kevin Owens. And it was almost like this collective like sigh of, oh my God, it's finally Kevin Owens is going to address Sami Zayn. That basically this has been lingering since War Games when Zayn partnered with the Bloodline. And out comes Kevin Owens in this Bret Hart jacket that just, I imagine that there are people, there are probably a very small amount of these jackets that are sold. And those super fans that have bought these have probably spent like a grand on this jacket.
This might have looked like a bit of a custom or at least like some form of like.
Is this his own work?
Well, it's not Brett's leather jacket. It's like.
I hope he got the okay then for this. Like this would be, this could be intellectual property disaster if he stole this image, which he would not be the only Quebecer this weekend to run into potential IP issues when it comes to designs and such on broadcasts.
Well, I saw no sledgehammers in this segment, so I think he's okay there. But I mean, obviously the tie into the Shawn appearance or the Shawn interaction that he's about to have on Saturday. And of course, he, you know, being in Texas, maybe, you know, already drawing some allusions to that. And also the fact that he's holding Brett's championship as well.
Okay. So we'll rely on that for this the addendum. Maybe the addendum is that Kevin Owens is going to bring Bret Hart to the Royal Rumble with him. The real creator of the ladder match.
Is it? Did Brett actually create it, or was it just something he took from Stampede?
It was something that Stampede did, and Brett's story was always that when he got to WWE, he came up with he pitched the concept, and they did a ladder match with him and Shawn that you can see, like they put it out on like Coliseum Home Video, and Brett's idea was eventually to do it at like a big show, and then Shawn and Razor got the ladder match gimmick. So that was.
Clearly, this will all be brought up.
The feud goes deep.
This will all be brought up on Saturday, I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm sure this will all be part of the addendum. Yeah. So Kevin Owens explain. Zayn, first of all, just says, okay, how do you want to do this? I knew this was coming ever since War Games. But Kevin Owens explains, no, I don't see this as the same thing as you teaming with Roman as I did Cody, because you have a history with Roman Reigns and you were willing to overlook certain things with Roman, but you also overlooked a lot of past actions I committed against you and you forgave me. That's because, Sammy, you're a good person. I thought this level of logic that was so, like, this would never have been at all made sense in a WWE setting until now. Like, trying to give some reason why, they were trying to give you a plausible reason for Owens not to kill this guy while also seeing through Kevin Owens' plan as well at the same time. It was, it's easier said than done. When it gets executed well, you say, oh, of course, this makes all the sense in the world. This could have been a mess if not delivered well. And I thought both were great here. So he explains how Zayn is a good person and you're still my best friend, even though on SmackDown he called him his then best friend, but best friend now. So that's how you know he's full of shit. He says that I think you will win the Royal Rumble because you deserve it. And then we can do one thing that we never have. We've headlined WrestleMania together as a tag team, but we could headline a WrestleMania for this, as he looks at the Winged Eagle title and states that all we need to do, you need to win the Royal Rumble, and I need to leave the Rumble as champion. And just like you had Reigns' back, I know you're going to have my back at the Royal Rumble. And he leaves Zayn looking so conflicted here. These two were great. I thought Sammy was fantastic from this whole promo, giving his whole reasoning. Like, this is something that every single year we would talk about for the Royal Rumble, is that they would just rely so much on it's the Royal Rumble, and we never would get promos of why this means something to you. And all of a sudden, this Rumble feels like the culmination of, number one, all these stars that are so much more over than they were a year ago. They're just that much more over. And they're, even a Sami Zayn is now giving you this, his own desire that you will be rooting for a Sami Zayn to win this. Like, they have done such a great job of creating all these different pathways you can go in this Rumble. But getting back to this, really set this up well going into the Rumble.
It's taking advantage of what the Rumble is able to provide, in that it's, number one, of course, like, doing something like this benefits the Rumble. Having as many stories that you can head into the Rumble with only makes the Rumble a more interesting match when it comes down to, you know, who you might actually be expecting to win. But it's also taking advantage of the energy and sort of like the exposure that a Rumble is able to provide to tell these long-term stories for all these guys and their ambitions towards winning a championship. And Sammy is one of those guys that, I mean, one of the few, as he mentioned sort of in this promo, who's maybe sort of bubbling on the surface. You might even consider him a main eventer, but one they've actually never crowned yet. And for him, I think having something like a Rumble or a Chamber or a Money in the Bank is so important because it allows him to, again, dig into this sort of story. He mentions that he's perhaps like in the top 5 to 6 or 7 people in the company right now. I would say he's probably number 7, because he's somebody who is constantly, as good as he is, struggling to not be overshadowed by like guys that are coming up and perhaps gaining a bit more momentum than him. You know, he's having to compete with the CM Punk, with an LA Knight, you know, with the Jey Uso, who at this point has kind of lapped him. And there's a real struggle, you know, as much emphasis as they're putting him, you know, towards him for this championship campaign. I do think that it's not a guarantee that he'll ever become a champion. But that doesn't mean that, you know, a great story can be told. And it doesn't mean that, like, I'm not going to enjoy these sort of promos, because as soon as Zayn starts talking about wanting to win the championship, it's some of the best promos that I think the show is able to offer. So I'm just, you know, enjoying the ride, whether or not he actually wins the championship. And I think you did a great job of like outlining the subtext of this Kevin Owens, you know, performance of just like a guy who is such a dick that he's willing to put his hatred of Sami Zayn aside in order to ask for his help, essentially, to help him retain this championship in a bout of just like very obvious manipulation that I thought was very well, you know, exemplified here.
Always down for a good gaslighting angle. And it makes you wonder, coming out of the Rumble, something involving these two with the Toronto show the next month. Like, they've certainly laid the foundation for coming out of that show to have a reason to revisit this. And then Owens, pays this tease off.
Could be the both of them in the chamber match. You know,
it could be.
I almost find that a bit fresher than, like, I don't know if I'm ready for another Zayn versus Owens match just yet. I feel like, you know, they need to save that one for a really, really big reason.
Kelly does an interview with Sheamus. He's obsessed with going after the IC title, which he's been going after for 5 years. He had to give an explanation. He's like, I almost had my career in advance where I won the title immediately from John Cena. And I guess what? I've just regressed since then. I didn't know what the analogy was here. But Braun rocks in and pretty much the same promo as Gunther here. This is the closest you'll ever get to this title. Retire, old man. And Sheamus was not happy with this comment. Jackie Redmond interviewed Ludwig Kaiser. God bless. The man had nothing to say here. It was kind of like a lot of these ones. It's going to be go out there and give us a like 30-second, 60-second promo. He just stated he's not impressed with Bron Breakker, Sami Zayn, or Penta, and he will deal with Penta on his own time. It's like, you'll deal with Penta as soon as they book that match for you, and you'll be glad they gave it to you. Roxanne Perez was in the front row for the next match. Nia Jax against Bayley, and early on, I found they did not have their rhythm going here, but in time, the big focus of Jax's attack was on the arm and shoulder of Bayley, who was fighting back with one arm. So Jax misses a leg drop on the edge and takes a sunset flip from the edge into the post and lands on the floor. Bayley hits her own annihilator, which did not look so devastating coming from Bayley. The avalanche is hit by Jax, and then she rams Bayley's bad shoulder into the post, goes for the annihilator, but gets yanked off. Bayley hits a sunset bomb off the turnbuckle, hits her elbow drop, and the crowd really got into these pair of near falls, and then is caught with a pop-up Samoan, a senton, and annihilator as Jax wins in 12 minutes and 21 seconds. They put her over fairly strong, and it made sense with the post-match because out comes Rhea Ripley for revenge from the opening show attack, and security has to separate them. I thought this was going to be a Rumble match, but in fact, they are doing it on Saturday night's main event, bringing the match total to 4 and the addendum segments to 1.
Yes. Well, for now, John, maybe.
Yeah, I have spoken too soon because we still have 3 hours of SmackDown to set up other potential addendums.
I think in a quick amount of time, they did a great job of building to Rhea versus Nia. Now, announcing the match this early does feel like it's too soon, but, you know, we can't rule out that this just might be a first chapter of a longer feud, because I certainly think there's a bigger story to be told with the two of them. They last had a match in the Chamber pay-per-view in Perth.
The Australia show.
That was a whole year ago, and at this point, I feel like they both feel like much fresher characters, or different characters, I should say, so I think there's room to tell a bigger story if they want to do that for the next month or so. But yeah, like Bayley coming in here, I mean, good match, you know, some good near falls here from Bayley, and leading to this big pull apart afterwards.
Given you have like Gunther and Rhea Ripley as champions, so obviously not in the Rumbles, I do wonder if either one of those matches is one they run back at the Rumble after this Saturday.
I can see that.
You would think like you would want them on that show, at least one of them. They recap the street fight from last week, and Finn Balor is off recuperating from his loss to Damian Priest. We also didn't have Damian Priest on the show. So they go to the Judgment Day's room, and Gable is getting help from Dominic, who is given a note, and he is off to study he's going to find the master of the dark arts of Lucha.
Yeah, so presumably what this is, like a phone number that he received, or an address, or the name of somebody who's...
I hope we're going to get vignettes of him going down to Mexico, and maybe he'll go into this like really cavernous home that's all run down on a mountaintop, and it's Mike Tenay.
You think Mike Tenay is the master of the dark arts of Lucha Libre?
I think so, yes.
I am curious to know like what this is leading up to. And like I hope it is a figure from the past that like everybody would recognize, you know? And I'm trying to think like in the WWE sort of world, like who would fit the billing of a master of the dark arts of Lucha Libre?
Maybe he's going to ask for directions and he's going to get sent to Phoenix.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm intrigued to see what they do with this, because I imagine they could have some fun with it.
Yeah. Send your best guess, everybody.
So try and make sense of this one for me. Balor and JD have been granted a rematch for the tag titles next week, but Finn Balor is out. So JD is now going to get Dominic as his replacement for this match that was booked without Balor's knowledge and was booked knowing that Balor is hurt. How does this make sense?
Well, I mean, there's more than enough precedent set for this, John. I mean, we have Naomi assuming the role of Jade Cargill as the tag team champions on the other show.
That was out of necessity. Your champion was injured. Why would we book a match here where one person is not even available?
Because I'm sure there's like a time limit on these rematch clauses, you know, and if you're not healthy to take it, then it's going to pass you up.
Okay, well, that's happening next week. Liv continues to subtly be pissed off at Dominic for screwing up the match with Rhea Ripley, and that continues. Liv is in a real like background role at the moment.
Yeah, coming off the Netflix thing, the storyline she has is this potential, like they're trying to build tension between Liv and Dominic, and it's really not interesting at all. Like for me, at least, you know, for now. Like I think Dom is really, to me, the Dominic character works when he's a guy who thinks he's a stud but clearly isn't. Now they're actually trying to like I think convince us that Liv. They're actually having a real relationship, and it's not just Liv using Dominic. At least that's maybe how I'm reading it, you know? So it's hard for me to buy, certainly in terms of star power. Something is missing from the Judgment Day when they've lost Priest, they've lost Rhea, they didn't have Finn Balor in this one too. So, I mean, in this
going to be just Carlito at the end of it playing those video games.
Sure. Mm.
This was the best. So we go to Lyra Valkyria and her video recapping her win of the IC title last week. And Lyra Valkyria explains what took her to championship glory last week. She spread her wings, shedding any dead feathers to reach the heights she knew she was capable of reaching. The heights I hope she reaches is the realization that because she is named after a bird doesn't mean she has to assume the characteristics of one. And now it is time for her to build her legacy and fly, Lyra, fly in formation. It's like, shed any dead feathers and spread your wings.
Honestly, dude, like there are some of these... I don't even know if you want to call them prospects now, but like these are people that are relatively young in their like main roster careers where they're clearly very lacking in this department where they're having to speak about themselves. And I even include Tiffany Stratton there. This over reliance on their catchphrases, an over reliance in this case on just like the sort of byline of like what the gimmick is, like I'm a bird inspired, you know, character. Is too much. So again,
we can laugh about the verbiage here, but to me it also speaks on the fact that like there's been no depth to this character. Like if you were to explain the Lyra Valkyria character, you couldn't, because they have not given you anything, including like for the character herself to just have a voice and substance. Like this is where we literally have the base level that her last name is Valkyria.
Yeah. The pressure's on her right now, you know, with this championship to, and she's going to get consistent airtime, and she's going to be criticized every single time she comes out there and cuts a promo like this one. So I hope she's able to find it, and I hope they're able to find it for her.
It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, so they aired a really nice video with him, which was surreal with the contrast of other news going on today. And then we heard from Marcus Freeman, the head coach of Notre Dame, who are playing in the championship game tonight, speaking about James Laurinaitis, the son of Joe Laurinaitis. And that was a good clip. It was brought up during like the week leading up to the game, and they got this clip and put it on TV. Zayn then meets up with Rollins, thanks him for their chat last week, and said that it really got through to me. And Rollins respects that, says, I'm almost rooting for you, Sammy, but I won't think twice about dumping you out in the Royal Rumble. And Zayn says, not if I throw you out first.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, as myself and Wei Ting will be providing full shows containing news of the day, questions, and so much more, going live on those nights for patrons. Plus, we will have coverage of Wrestle Kingdom 19, Wrestle Dynasty, The People versus GCW, TNA Genesis, a Rewind Away retrospective on the Ric Flair Ricky Steamboat feud of 1989, all of your regular shows, a Daredevil primer, and throughout the month of January, you get a free month if you sign up for an annual subscription. $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com. Pete Dunne against Penta. This is where I'm so glad I'm a citizen of Canada, Wei, for many reasons, but we get the international feed. And that meant Pete Dunne, not only, you knew we were in a commercial break when Pete Dunne's music played, and there's not one American that knows what this man's theme sounds like. And then after his entrance, he gets promo time. I'm like, we're deep into a commercial. And he gets on the mic of this very mild crowd who are probably figuring out which guy this is. And he explains, "Shut your mouths! Unless you call me by my proper name." Now, I want to apologize a bit to Lyra Valkyria, because there is a worse spot to be in, and that is the same goddamn joke that we are like a year into with this guy. This is all he has. And then he goes to explain that this is the first week he's been invited to Raw since they've moved to Netflix. Dude didn't even get goddamn catering the last 2 weeks. He wasn't even a fly-in. And then as he's mid-promo, they fade to black, which I do not believe was just a way to have fun with this guy. I think it was legit they were just going to black. Mm-hmm. And Cole made light of this when they came back. And then Penta gets an entrance. This is when we knew we were out of commercial. And Cole remarks how everyone is buying that Penta mask, which is going for a cool $75 on WWE Shop. And I imagine plenty are buying this.
That's
with
it?
With their weightlifting. But could you imagine walking around with this mask and Cody's weightlifting belt? I mean, just line up the phone numbers you would be getting from the opposite sex.
Yes.
They mention that this is not their first match, Wei.
Oh,
don't you remember RevPro, Michael Cole's favorite UK independent, when they had their match in 2017?
Interestingly, the promotion was not mentioned by name.
They mentioned RevPro.
Are you sure?
They absolutely really? Said RevPro. Yeah, I definitely heard
okay. All right. Never mind then.
Yeah, I heard RevPro. Dunne twists the fingers and then stomps the elbow. And Cole tells Wade, "Listen." And they just stopped talking. And, dude, there was nobody chanting Butch as Michael Cole tried to refer to all these chants that are getting under the skin of Pete Dunne. They're trying, folks. They really are. And Dunne, they ended up, they did have a good match. It's just Dunne is not, he's done with this character is what I will state. He stops a dive from Penta, suplexes him onto the edge, and then goes to tie Penta's mask to the rope. This did not go over so well. This was maybe Pete Dunne was watching Tessa Blanchard for tips on how to use various parts of the ring for their match, and this not immediately unties. Penta just is broken free instantly. Dunne is in control, but then Penta fights back, leading to the Mexican Destroyer and a Topecon Hero. Dunne manages to snap the fingers and goes for the triangle, so Penta lifts, turns it into a backbreaker, and hits the Sacrifice and a Penta driver to win in 10 minutes. And Penta is now 2-0 in the Raw rankings.
Yeah, yeah. Much like last week, I mean, we're getting to see Penta wrestle more of a traditional WWE style, so that means a lot more selling showcased of him. And while that might not sound as exciting on the surface, I think in Penta's case, I actually find it quite novel to see him work slightly different and to showcase more of his selling. And I thought like it helped actually accentuate the big moves whenever they did occur. So for me, like as somebody who's seen plenty of Penta's like, you know, like flashy moves at this point, I kind of appreciate another instance where I just get to see him sell his fingers, for instance. So I enjoyed it. They're putting a lot into making this guy feel like a big star with their constant mentions of him, even on SmackDown, for instance, replaying the first match and the pyro budget that they're setting up for this guy for his entrances. So
as long as you keep selling those masks, we'll keep putting the pyro budget into you. But those sales go down, so does the pyro. If
if this guy had been signed a number of years ago, would Vince McMahon have given him like a first and last name? Like, would he have become like Paul, Paul,
yeah,
Demonic or something like that? Like, I just wonder,
Paul
like,
yeah,
I just wonder like what the idea would have been, because they would not have just taken him as is, as a finished package, and just placed him in this role. I try to imagine what this would have been like.
I think he would be at best stuck at NXT, you know, might eventually find a role for himself in the LWO or something like that.
And maybe he would have been a Kane's assistant or something like that. They would have been like the brothers-in-law of destruction or something.
Yes.
What did we lose out by Penta not coming in 2017 after that Rev Pro match? Logan Paul video talking about being the best at everything he does. The best line in here. He just says this like completely with a straight face and like no smirk, no like sarcasm. He just states, "I'm the only man to beat Floyd Mayweather Jr.," which is not true. He is. It was an exhibition that they agreed not to score at the end. I was like, dude did not win this match, okay? This was, but he's just running with it. So I guess if you say it enough times, it's true, which is, I guess, the new way to be. And he is going to become the greatest wrestler ever, okay? So lofty goal. And he will make his Raw debut next Monday, which I can't imagine is his Raw debut, is it?
His Raw Netflix. Well,
oh, his Raw Netflix debut. Okay.
I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure if he's actually been on Raw before or not.
Been on Raw. And then, so he's on next week, and this is all in Atlanta. War Raiders against Dominic and Balor. Cody Rhodes will appear, and that's all they mentioned. Nothing about the Reigns segment that they had scheduled and stated on TV for the 27th. So we will see if he's on the show next week. And then CM Punk enters through the concourse, and this place is going wild, and he goes to the Jackie Redman interview segment. This threw me off way, because my brain automatically goes to a commercial break, but this was obviously not happening in a commercial break. So my international feed brain it got reeducated here. Punk comes out, and I love that they did this here as opposed to in the ring. It felt so lively, and dude, Punk was just, you could tell he was just... on fire for these like 3 minutes, because he cut a hell of a promo.
It's also where Jackie is positioned, and at this point I think Jackie should be the only person interviewing CM Punk. I think they have like a really great rapport, and I'm sure Punk might have that preference too.
Well, she brings up the Royal Rumble, how he's never won the Rumble, and this is the most stacked in the history of the Rumble. Punk explains that he makes history, and he's going to do so at the Royal Rumble. He comes alive when the pressure is on. No one can beat me when I'm at my best, and I've got the people behind me. I mean, he was maybe he secretly watched that last that World's End pay-per-view and heard that Will Ospreay call to arms for the fans. He says, "John Cena, I can't see him throwing me over the top." And I thought he was going to go one by one and have a clever line for each, but it kind of ended at Cena. He just said, "Reigns, I didn't need his help at War Games. He needed my help. And there's no friends in the Royal Rumble. I put Drew in the dirt. Sami Zayn isn't on my level, according to Wei Ting, who has him ranked number 7. And then says, even if Hulk Hogan enters the Royal Rumble, I'll throw his. And he had this ever so slight pause and referred to his dusty ass. And I couldn't only imagine what words were going through his mind as a descriptor for Hulk Hogan, and says he will kill Hulkamania. I think this was some market research on the fly, and says that the Rumble is about settling scores and cashing in debts and maybe calling in a favor or two if I need to. 29 men are going night-night. Just a tremendous promo from CM Punk here.
Okay, so a clue as to what that favor might be, you know, it's something he can call during the match itself.
Yeah, what favor could you get during the match?
Well, it's something involving Paul Heyman, of course. So,
what can Heyman do for you in a Royal Rumble setting?
What
power does Heyman have? Period.
Well, Heyman has a lot of contacts, you know, a lot of connections. Maybe people that owe Paul Heyman favors that might be able to come in to help. But it's not like the CM Punk character to ask for, like, I don't know, somebody to run in on his behalf or something. So what could it be? You know, could it show up at the Rumble?
What if it turns out that they draw numbers, and then Punk and Reigns we find out like their numbers or something, and Punk gets Reigns' number and gets to come in like 30th or something.
You think that was the pact he made with Heyman all the way back at Survivor Series?
He said you owe me a favor.
Like I get to take Roman Reigns' number when we both enter the Rumble in January.
I mean, that's one favor.
But that's also assuming
what would Reigns... be a satisfying favor here? That would makes sense.
Well, we don't even know that the favor is going to be cashed in on at the Rumble. He just mentioned it in the promo. So, I mean, listen, they're the ones who created it. I hope they have a satisfying.
I am sure they have an end for this favor because it's been hit so hard. Yeah. Then Kathy Kelly interviewed the War Raiders. This did not make it onto the broadcast. And they are going to return prestige and, wait for it, honor to the tag division. And they're not looking past anyone. And that was that. Their take on Dominic and JD next week, which basically Kathy Kelly said, okay, you're looking past them. And Ro was like, we don't look past anyone. But
who's Ro?
What's his name? Eric. Sorry. Eric. Yeah,
thank you. Well, you're getting too into the honor part, of course.
They took me back to 2000. My brain's in 2017 on this show.
At this point, really, like, is this the most they have going for them? The fact that they're like sort of like an ROH revival stable?
Their story is that they were part of a group that we won't name specifically, but basically we were in an ROH faction with Damian Priest, and our careers nearly ended, but they didn't.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool.
Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark against Dakota Kai and Io Sky. I think that Zoe Stark watched that Gaia Girls documentary with the brutal dropkick because she decided, you know what, I could do that. And she hit this missile dropkick to Dakota Kai, and I thought Dakota's face was like it just shattered. She hit this missile dropkick. Listen, if she missile dropkick, provided it didn't kill Dakota Kai, it looked amazing. They continue. Eventually, Sky is tagged in, and she hits the bullet train attack. Deville gets yanked off the apron, and then Kai is dropped on the floor. Baszler hits a knee strike to Kai, and then the Kirifuda is applied onto Sky, but Sky breaks free, leaping through the rope, and hits over the moonsault, pinning Baszler in 6 minutes and 24 seconds.
Yeah, felt relatively, you know, like quick and also forgettable, honestly, by the end of it, you know, coming off of the U.S. Championship. That's what's on Raw, right? Sorry, IC Championship Tournament. I guess I'm not sensing that much momentum in like the narrative here. I don't know if this PFC versus Damage Control feud has really done much for either stable. And ultimately, just this kind of felt like a bit of a forgettable segment.
And that takes us to the main event, billed as the WrestleMania 40 rematch between Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. These entrances took up pretty much a third hour of Raw. Cole mentions that Drew McIntyre's title reign at WrestleMania last year lasted as long as the TikTok ban. Haha, pop culture. Rollins won the Rumble in 2019, they know, Drew in 2020. And Drew catches Seth's suicide dive, and he belly-to-bellies this guy onto the desk. And man, were the PBR guys, they were on their feet getting into this. And then Drew is yelling at Seth that he's so damn selfish. We're both on the same team against Roman Reigns. We're saving the in-ring dialogue for the main event each week on Raw. That's what I think the Netflix era is going to bring us away. But then Seth rams Drew's shoulder into the post over and over, and this would play into a submission later, as he would get the crossface applied. But Drew reaches the rope, and now it's Seth's turn. He's on offense. You question me? You question my integrity? And then Drew pokes him in the eye, says, shut up. And he hits him with the future shock for a near fall. That means Drew's in control, Way. Your words and your actions, they don't line up. WrestleMania season? What did you think was going to happen? And Way is observing what he calls a mid-match debate that we are getting. This was an important Way. I have never taken so much dialogue during a match in my play-by-play. So he continues with lariats, and then after another lariat attempt, Seth ducks and catches him with a jackknife cover for the pin, and so Drew is furious. Wade says it's a rarity that Drew gets caught like that. I was like, wait a minute. This happened 2 weeks ago with Jey Uso. This identical finish where he caught him out of nowhere. This was exactly what happened. This happens to Drew a fair amount of times. So he is beating up Seth. He claymores him and then places his head by the post, and he's ready for another claymore when Sami Zayn, the good guy, comes down to help Seth and stops Drew, checks in on Rollins, and then gets nailed with a Glasgow kiss. And Drew, he wasn't done with Seth. He just had to explain to him, "We should be on the same team, but you're so damn selfish." And then as Drew has him in the corner, Zayn runs at him with the haluva. Drew gets out of the way, and Sami Zayn nails Seth Rollins with the haluva kick. And then they stayed on Zayn and Seth for an uncomfortably long period of time until they finally went to black as we hear Sami, "I wasn't aiming for you. I wasn't aiming for you." And Seth just has to have the, "Huh? What did you do that for?" look on his face. And yes, that was the end. What drama. Oh, look at this way. How many ways could you interpret this?
So, I mean, it's hard for me to tell how you actually felt about a segment. Like, I just judging by the recap, I'm assuming you did not like any of this at all. Here's the thing.
I get. Like, it was fine. It was well done. But the thing is, though, like, what if Sami Zayn accidentally hits Seth or Drew? Why would he care? There's no relationship between these two. This is like, Seth is like, "I'll dump you over the Rumble. We have no loyalty to each other." It's like, "Yeah, I tried to kick Drew. I hit you by mistake. If you don't believe me, I don't care. Like, there's no real estate in this friendship for me. I don't care if you believe me or not." None.
So those are the thoughts of somebody who has watched a lot of wrestling and these tricks.
No, that's not true. That's coming from someone that doesn't have many friends. So that I can speak to the fact that if I felt after this show, you know, like, "Way, really great show tonight," and you were like, "I think you were a little rude at times," I would take that to heart. Okay. Now, if it was, you know, somebody that, you know, if I walk down the street and I accidentally, I'm looking at my phone and I accidentally bump into someone and they tell me, "Hey, that was kind of rude," I'd be like, "Sorry. I honestly am sorry. I know I'm sorry. I don't care if you believe me or not, because you're of no consequence to me." You understand the difference?
Okay.
I don't
not
believe.
Not really, but.
Okay. But everyone, the friendless people out there, they understand this, okay?
Listen, it's just a classic, and I think well done friendly fire spot here, just to kind of build some extra tension between Rollins and Sami Zayn. These two have had a lot of interactions on screen lately, including on this particular show, and at this point they are good friends who just have a respectable, you know, common goal of both of them each wanting the championship and the spot at WrestleMania. The fact that they did this and are continuing to draw the association between the two, I wonder if it's supposed to tease us with something bigger. You know, more than just perhaps an interaction at the Rumble. Like, I'm looking at this and wondering if they're trying to communicate that we should be expecting these two to have eventually, in the near future, maybe even a WrestleMania, a really big rivalry. And I'm kind of curious to see how that might unfold.
I see a bunch of long-term things from all of this stuff, between the Owen Zayn stuff, the Zayn Rollins stuff. I also feel like at some point, it's just they have put too many pieces in place for Drew and Seth to not, and they so hit you over the head here with Drew, and we should be on the same team. I do feel that is an end goal here, that Drew and Seth will be in alignment. They have their common enemy in Roman Reigns. They also have their common enemy in CM Punk, of these people that are in Reigns that is going to destroy this company from within, and similar with CM Punk, who's this toxic cancer that we're the only ones who seem to be able to see what everyone else is just ignoring or oblivious to.
We'll see. I mean, I feel like the opportunity was there for them to actually turn Rollins if they wanted to do that, like ahead of this Mania cycle. I almost sense now he's more of like the babyface who just really happens to hate Roman Reigns. And in effect, he's almost like the what if Drew McIntyre did not stray directly into the dark side type of, you know, character. Like, he and Drew are the same, but rather than choosing complete bad, Rollins maintains that he does not like Roman, but he's sticking to his current path.
My tone aside, I thought this was a really good episode of Raw. I thought that the I would say that overall, first of all, a pretty great crowd for this show.
Really,
but it was a lot of the promo segments that I thought hit really big with. I thought Punk's promo was great for what it needed to be. I thought Jey Uso was excellent on the show. I thought Sami Zayn was excellent on the show. The New Day stuff worked very well. And the rest of it, like overall, it's got the feel of this company is red hot and this feels like the big flagship show that they're promoting this as you're going into Saturday night's main event and to the Rumble. And it's a tough balancing act, I think, building these two shows at the time that you've got Saturday and then the Rumble. But they're in good shape. Like if they were not hot, this might be a lot to tackle with all of this television you're filling and doing all of these specials. But they are certainly not feeling any of that pinch right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're hot, yeah, and that certainly makes things easier, but they're hot because the show is good, you know, and this is 2 weeks in a row where I feel like it was certainly a return to form after, like, what felt like a spectacular debut on Netflix, but maybe less than satisfying in terms of just, like, what I expect out of Raw every single week. For me, like, what I think I'm most impressed by with Raw these days is just their continued ability to build and to create new stars, and I think we continue to see that in, like, for instance, Penta, who I think had a very good second showing here, and their ability to make interesting, you know, new threads out of, like, characters that are already established, like with Sammy and Rollins here. Overall, I just thought it was like an entertaining show, and the segments that were maybe just like a bit blah ultimately didn't last that long. There are still problems on the show. It's not like every division is singing, you know. I'm looking at the women's mid card, for instance, which I think continues to be like a spot where that just doesn't feel like it's got a whole lot going on, despite having like a pretty, you know, like well done IC title tournament. But beyond that, like the things that matter are feeling really strong.
Before we end the Raw review portion, I'll end it with this. So last week we got the first set of charts from Netflix, and I think globally Raw was number six among TV shows, and then, you know, different rankings among different territories and such. SmackDown and NXT didn't rank anywhere in the top 10 for the international ones. Given this, we're about to get the charts for week two. Do you see Raw being able to, even in the U.S., do you think it holds on to a top 10 ranking, or is the fact that SmackDown is the better example not in like that level? Like, it does go to show you that, like, there's a lot of competition on Netflix, and is Raw consistently going to be a top 10 performing show for Netflix in the U.S. and other similar territories?
So I'm no expert in this, John. So my answer is mainly I don't know.
Basically, do you think that the interest is going to be like, is there going to, was week one just going to be this really high point that hit so big, and, you know, the rank and file Raws that we're now into, even at a popularity boom for WWE, it's not going to be at the level where like some of these, the 10 hottest Netflix shows are.
Yeah, I it's so unprecedented that I can't really say for sure. But if I had to guess, I would say yes, because I think most, and I wouldn't necessarily look at like SmackDown and NXT as like, you know, maybe definitive signs that Raw wouldn't achieve that, because I think the promotional power has been behind Raw being on Netflix, and you're hearing a lot less about SmackDown and NXT being available, and that's just the way, because they're catering
and it's
to the
bigger
US audience.
Like it is very clearly right now, like it is not a 1A, 1B. It's like, it's number one. SmackDown is number two. I think that's very clear.
Yeah, yeah. And Fridays continues to be a struggle, you know, for a lot of people to make a show feel like a priority. NXT is, you know, the third brand by a wide margin. And Raw is the one with all the sort of momentum right now. So I would guess yes. But again, let's see tomorrow. So when do we get this data? Like,
when did it come out last week? I think it comes out Thursdays, if not Wednesday. I should know this off the top of my head, but we'll know it in a few days. All right, that concludes our review of Raw, and now it is time for all of the news. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. postwrestlingcafe.com.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.